The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Colombia.
It's that time of the week again, folks. It's me, your host, Richard McCall, here in Bogota, Colombia. And it's episode 156. And our very special guest today on this landmark episode, and in a minute I'll tell you why, but this landmark episode is Adrian Alselma in Medellin. He's the director and owner of Colombia Reports. That's ColombiaReports.com, the biggest and most widely read news site about Colombia and Colombian news anywhere on the web. So do check that out if you want your independent press about Colombia. That's ColombiaReports.com. But I would assume that most of you out there who listen, those of you that listen to Colombia Calling, will already have heard of Colombia Reports. So anyway, you know, back independent press, back the independent media. We need more voices out there telling it how it is here in Colombia. But as I mentioned previously, this is a landmark show. Why is it a landmark show? Well, today I turn 40 years old. That's right, 40 years old. 10 of those years here in Colombia, and not a moment's regret at all. I'm happy here in Colombia, 40 years old, raising my son, married to my wonderful wife. And yes, we are here in Colombia. We are here to stay. So yes, that's Colombia Calling, episode 156 with Adrian Alselma. Those of you who listen week in, week out will know that last week, Laura Brown was hosting the show. She helped me out because I was guiding the owner of Abercrombie & Kent around Medellin and the coffee zone. That was because he's got in his plans the idea to open up luxury travel to Colombia. Now, we were in Medellin, and hence that's why this week we're talking to Adrian Alselma, who is in Medellin. So who better to talk to about the situation in that city than Adrian himself, who's been living there for many years now. So that's, I was with the guy Abercrombie & Kent, traveling in private jets, private helicopters, and so on. Yes, it was a blessed existence for but a few days before returning to reality here in Bogota. And so Laura Brown took over for 155. She did the bird watching episode with Chantel Duplessis from South Africa. I hope you enjoyed that show. I know I did. It was most interesting, very informative about Colombia as well. What more can I say? I was meant to be in the jungle. I was meant to be in the jungle reporting from the Llanos de Ari at the FARC's 10th conference, the conference at which the guerrilla group, who've been in a conflict with the Colombian state for 52 years, they will be voting on the peace accords themselves within their rebel ranks. This week I was meant to be there, but something happened. Avianca cancelled my flight due to bad weather, and I couldn't get on any other further flights, so unfortunately, I am not submitting this podcast from the Llanos de Ari amongst the FARC, because I thought it was going to be a very special show telling you how it is in a FARC camp. But unfortunately not. I'm back here in Bogota, but I get to spend my 40th birthday with my family and not the guerrillas. Who knows which would be more interesting or more fun. But anyway, I'm here in Bogota, and Colombia Calling continues. Please get in touch at Columbia Calling, ColumbiaCalling at gmail.com, and our website, ColumbiaCallingRadio.com. I've received a few emails this week, and we will try and answer each and every one of them. And of course, I take into account any and all, ideas that you guys out there have for Columbia Calling, in particular history-related podcasts, which I know many of you are interested in. So I have some projects in the pipeline that I hope to be able to share with you, and we'll keep on talking. We'll keep on rolling and producing Columbia Calling for all of you out there who continue to enjoy this podcast coming to you out of Columbia. So I'm going to take a short break, and we'll be back on the line with Adrian Alselma, the Dutchman in Medellin, the director of Columbia Reports, and we'll be talking about Medellin and, you know, what is going on in that city at the moment. So I know this will be a popular show. Thank you for listening, all of you out there. Please spread the word and continue to share Columbia Calling with your friends. So I'll sign off right now and come back in just a couple of minutes. This is episode 156. I'm Richard McCall. And we're back. This is Columbia Calling. I'm Richard McCall here in Bogota, Colombia, 2,600 meters closer to the stars. And my very special guest this week is Adrian Alselma of Columbia Reports, and he's in Medellin. So welcome back. This is your second time on the show, Adrian.
I'm honored. Thank you.
It's an honor to have you on the show. I mean, your website goes from strength to strength. How many hits a day are you getting?
We're hitting like the 6,000 people a day now.
6,000 people a day. And then when you're picked up, for example, or mentioned in the Wall Street Journal or somewhere like that, you get something like 50,000, I think.
Yeah, 50 would be many, but I think we peaked at 30 at one point.
That's still pretty cool. I mean, 30,000, that's a lot of readers. That's a lot of people reading about Columbia and the independent press. That's right. So let's just focus on that for a second. You are an independent, I mean, wholly independent website reporting about Columbia. Does this get you in trouble?
So far, it hasn't.
And how many years have you been running Columbia Reports?
Eight and a half years.
Fantastic. Well, now, we talked about this earlier before, of course, in the other interview, which was way back. I mean, we're talking 3 years ago now. This is episode 156. We continue to go from strength to strength. This episode was meant to be recorded from the Llanos de Yari, where I was going to be at the FARC conference, or the FARC-a-palooza, and I was supposed to be down there, but you know, the weather and Avianca conspired to not permit my passage to the guerrillas, so unfortunately I'll not be there, but it is going to be a circus. I can expect the type of articles to come out of there, because 900 members of the press will be there. That's foreign and domestic, but 900 journalists will be turning up in these days down there in the Llanos de Yari. So who knows how much will actually get done.
That's like two journalists for every guerrilla, is it?
Yeah, pretty much so. It's kind of like when Uribe said that to kill each guerrilla we need three soldiers, you know. So now for every journalist to cover one guerrilla we need three journalists. So and I got sent the schedule of events, and the journalists are going to be expected to sit in those conferences and listen to the importance of Simon Trinidad and the importance of Alfonso Cano and the importance. I mean, it's a proper academic conference. It's not for their benefit. It's for the benefit of the guerrillas. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting, but you know, let's get on to our topic of today because it's important and because it's always talked about, and of course it's, well, I mean, I guess we can define it as the Pablo Escobar topic. And as you are in Medellin, you are best placed to make comments about this. And I was just in Medellin, so I have some personal impressions to share with the listeners out there, the 10,000 plus of you downloading this show per week. So thank you for that. But I want to talk about it. Let's start with Medellin. I mean, you know, the truth is Medellin has had a turnaround. I mean, it's a different city to the one that it was 10, 15, 20 years ago. But I can't help but think that the money generated from the cocaine trade and illicit trades, let's say illegal mining, people transportation and all that, transshipment of everything, is still permeating every level of society there. I mean, your best place to agree or disagree with me, but, you know, let them have it, Adrian.
I disagree that there has been a turnaround. Like Pablo Escobar was killed in 1993, mm-hmm. which is how many years ago?
13.
Sorry?
What's that? Hang on. 1993?
Oh, add another 10. It's like 25 years ago already. If I compare my home city today with how it was 25 years ago, I see the same difference. Mm-hmm. So I don't understand why we are talking about a turnaround if the city is still, like, the neighborhood is still run by the same muchachos that you see in Narcos doing their thing in the 1990s. Mm-hmm. The upper class in Medellin still has, like, very real ties to the Oficina de Envigado, which was founded by Pablo Escobar. So what you've seen is an evolution of the phenomenon after the death of Escobar. But it's not been a turnaround. It's an evolution.
It's the evolution. But, you know, I mean, I'm quoting from the 1,000-odd articles that came out when Medellin was voted as the most innovative city because of its work on, let's say, social inclusion.
Medellin voted itself the most innovative city. That's a difference.
This is true. It was an online voting thing. But, you know, people come to Medellin and they have tours which say the transformation of Medellin tour. But you're saying there's been no transformation. It's been an evolution.
Well, there's not been any more transformation than in whichever other city. Mm-hmm. I mean, like the revolutionary event was the bullet that went through Pablo Escobar's head. Mm-hmm. That was like the turnaround. That was the turning point. But ever since, like it's been. Like, after Escobar, violence actually escalated because the paramilitaries took over the criminal organization run by Escobar here in Medellin, and it was after their demobilization between 2003 and 2006 that violent. Violence indicators, like, really started dropping. Mm-hmm. And mainly because there was agreement between the person running the underworld, Don Berna, and the then mayor, Sergio Fajardo.
Who's now the governor of Antioquia, right?
He's now the ex-governor of Antioquia.
Okay. So he'll be running for president in the next presidential election, I imagine.
Yeah.
Okay. So we've had agreements done. I mean, and these agreements allowed industry to grow, allowed the city to flourish socially, let's say, because I assume that the murder rate may have dropped, but or it was sort of hidden to the less salubrious neighborhoods so that we didn't know that it was going on. I mean, is that what was going on?
It's more fluid like that. Like the murder rate for a small part has been reduced because the modus operandi of the gangs. Mm. So a lot of the gangs belonging to what we call the Oficina de Envigado, they disappear their victims. So rather than leaving a body on the street, which means like another check on the homicide list, mm. they just chop them up and throw them in the river. So like the homicides that are taking place are just like less visible, and they don't appear in the homicide statistics anymore.
Yeah.
Having said that, like violence has drastically reduced over the years, but this has nothing to do with Escobar. This has to do with how the militias and the gangs in the city are functioning.
Mm. No, I spoke to a guy from the CTI, so that's like the Colombian CSI, really, and he said, yeah, no, you know, I've uncovered some graves, and they were sort of graves that were almost vertical in type, not horizontal. And we asked the guy who located them. So how did this work? Well, no, they were those sort of canisters, the plastic canisters, and they put the bodies in them with acid, and then several months later would dig them up and then just empty them into the Magdalena River. So there's no record of these people ever having been, you know, murdered. They completely disappeared altogether. The most heinous and nefarious.
My friend lives in a neighborhood called Aranjuez.
Mm-hmm.
On her block, a few years ago, like three people went missing within a period of 2 months. They never returned. They just disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
And I presume that they've been murdered.
Yeah.
So if you're talking about like three people disappearing on one block in 2 months, like imagine like the rate of this going on.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was in Medellin. I was in Medellin last week, and I was there for a Monday, just that, and I was staying at which is quoted as being the best hotel in Medellin. I'm not going to name it because I'm not going to, you know, open myself up to all sorts of criticism and perhaps a lawsuit. But I was staying in the most, you know.
Oh, well, if you were talking about the Charlie, the most favorite place for whoremongers.
I will neither confirm nor deny this issue. But yes, there were young ladies coming in, coming out, coming and going at all hours of the day. And I've since heard that previously they used to be able to come in and you know, just get into the lifts and go up to each floor and knock on the doors looking for punters. Now that the elevator needs to be accessed by your own key card. But so what the hotel has done is put in a state-of-the-art gym and invites these girls to work out in the gym, and then the patrons of the hotel can then meet the girls there. But that's what I think. I mean, this, I know it seems like a jump, but this is all related to this industry. Everything's related to this money, the money that flows through Medellin.
Or a culture.
Yeah.
Like what Pablo Escobar disgracefully has done is create a narco culture, mm-hmm, in Medellin where, which permeates on all levels. Like it has reduced women to sex objects.
Mm-hmm.
It allows mothers to justify that their son is a murderer, for example. People do not have a sense of like how to build a business, that there's no confidence, and so it's more that like Escobar and his successors, mm, have imposed a narco culture on Medellin, and which is terrible. Like it's a lot of bling, a lot of vulgar stuff, which consequently attracts all kinds of tourists,
yeah,
that we really do not need here.
Yeah, and I know you've done a piece. You did a piece recently on Columbia Reports about was it an American gentleman who was advertising this kind of vacation?
Uh-huh.
Has he been deported or jailed?
I don't know. I imagine so.
Okay, so he was renting out apartments for people to be able to come down and let's say partake
and participate in this kind of tourism, which is it's perpetuating this problem in Medellin. And that's, and this is what I felt when I was there. I mean, I was there for 2 days, one night, and it was just like the word prepagos. Everything was a kind of plastic bling culture. Everything was appearance. And the clientele of the hotel in which I was staying were clearly there for this. There was, I mean, and I hate generalizing it, but it was too clear. It was men, it was women, it was everything.
It's embarrassing also, like, as a foreigner living in Medellin, like I can't get into a taxi without the driver asking me if I wanna see some girls.
Oh, I know.
And I'm like, no, I just wanna go home.
I just want to go home. Yeah, yeah. I just, you know, I've had a long day. I work here. I live here. I've been here 10 years or so. I mean, it's like, it really, does it need to be this sad? But it is that sad. And you know, we were up in the cable car goes up to San Antonio, or up there near the Biblioteca España. Santo Domingo. We were up there, and first of all, that's a tragedy in itself. So the library, which has been built up on this more humble area to promote sort of inclusion and education in an area that wouldn't ordinarily have it, the facades are all falling down and nobody wants to repair it. So it's just in scaffolding, isn't it?
It's window dressing, and that's what like Medellin has been doing rather than fixing the causes.
Mm.
That spurred like the rise of Escobar and has perpetuated the city's involvement in drug trafficking. Mm-hmm. Like rather than like creating jobs, like the unemployment rate in Medellin is well higher than in Bogota. Mm-hmm. The poverty level in Bogota, for example, stands at 10%. In Medellin, it stands at 33%.
That's huge.
So rather than coming up with like proper policies that seek to target the causes of drug trafficking, they or a social transformation, they just come up with really stupid initiatives that are nothing but window dressing. Mm-hmm. just like putting a different dress on the same thing.
Well, really, I mean, it's fascinating to be able to talk so frankly with you about this, and I think we're very much on the same page when we talk about this, because, you know, I don't go often to Medellin, but every time I go, I see something more like this. But let's take a short break, and we'll be back, and we're going to come back in the next section of the show and talk further about the sort of the effect of these new TV shows, Narcos, the second series, and there are a few other movies that have come out or will be coming out shortly. Either glamorizing or condemning, depending on what you feel and how you think about these things, the drugs trade, the money laundering, the infiltration of money permeating every level of society in Medellin. So we're talking to Adrian Alselma of Colombia Reports. That's the independent website reporting on all news from Colombia. Check it out. That's ColombiaReports.com. Very easy to see that. And to keep and to continue reading the website, please, you know, give a donation. You can donate as little as $5 a month or as much as you like to keep the independent press in business. So this is Colombia Calling. I'm talking to Adrian Alselma. We'll take a short break and we'll be back talking further about Medellin. Thank you for listening. And we're back. This is Colombia Calling. I'm Richard McCall, and we're talking to Adrian Alselma on this episode 156. He's the director, editor, writer for ColombiaReports.com out in the city of Medellin. And that's why we're talking to him this week. We're talking about Medellin, and really we're talking about the narco culture and what has, you know, really continued to be a major problem for the city. So, Adrian, we've been talking about the window dressing that the gimmicks almost that the local authorities and international bodies and so on have been doing for Medellin. But the root cause, at the base of it, there's just too much money and there's no jobs. Would you say that's the right thing?
Well, the incentives to go bad are outweighing the incentives to go well.
Yeah.
But if I look among my friends, like almost none of them have jobs, and we are talking about like graduated, like people who graduated from university. One friend, actually a political scientist, like she just gave up and moved to Bogota.
Yeah.
And she noticed like at the bus terminal already that there were like 6 vacancies. Like here you don't see any vacancies in any shop ever.
Interesting. Well, that's it. When we were up there in the Santo Domingo, up in the cable car, I was up there with the owner of a top-end luxury travel agency, taking a look around to see how he could incorporate Medellin into a travel plan in Colombia. And a young guy on a very, very flashy motorcycle came past, and he had the voluptuous girl on the back. And we, you know where that money comes from. You know how he got it, because we were up there at this viewpoint. Anyway, the owner of this travel agency said, "Well, if I were to be born, or if I was born in Medellin at any point, I would have been that guy on the bike. You know, I would have been that guy on the bike with the girl." So yes, I mean, this is the guy. He says, "I would be that guy on the bike. I would be the person with the girl if I had been born in Medellin." And this is the reality of it. It's too. It would just be. It's so much harder, and it's to make an honest living of things in Medellin. And I think this comes across when we're watching all of those series, when we're watching the movies being made about Medellin, when we think about Medellin, when we read about what's going on in Colombia. I mean, I just saw this morning the trailer for a new movie with the guy from Breaking Bad. I think it's called The Infiltrator or someone like that.
Yeah.
Is this the true story of a DEA agent who helped bring down Pablo Escobar? I don't know. But it's yet another story. And then I've seen...
No, it's about the involvement of American banks in the whole money laundering of the Colombian cartels.
Fantastic. Now, that is interesting to me. That I find interesting because it brings in that side of things, that there is a huge, obviously a U.S. involvement, not only in the banks, but of course, supply and demand for the Colombia's product. I saw another movie not so long ago called Sicario, which was pretty poor, I have to say. And then the other one, which I saw, I can tell everyone to avoid, called Escobar Paradise Lost. My word, that was bad.
I saw that one too. What a pile of shit.
I mean, the however many millions or 100 millions it took to film that, they could have invested that somewhere else. I mean, that's what I say at the end of it. It was so bad. It made me think of just of all those awful movies. But no, let's get on to Narcos now.
Because Narcos is a different thing.
Yeah.
So where Paradise Lost, I thought was like an exploitative movie, and completely like insensitive to the harshness of Colombian reality. Narcos, on the other hand, I applaud for how sensitive they are to the ambiguity of things, the politics of the drug war, and the reality of many young people in my city.
Okay, it's interesting because it's I watched 6 episodes of the first series and then just sort of switched off. I just got a little bit bored, but then it's not aimed at me. That's the truth of it. It's not aimed at me. It's not aimed at someone, maybe who lives here, maybe who reads about it. But you live in Medellin, so
I've been watching Narcos with people from Medellin, and they also loved it.
Wow, this is good. this is a good thing, because then, I mean, for me, it's it represents this, like, let's say, a coming to terms or an education of the past, and not only national one, but international. I mean, we're hitting the international markets with this, giving more information about what is going on, what has gone on in Colombia. So, I mean, you're applauding it. Your former journalist protege, Stephen Cohen, writes a few pieces, has written a couple of pieces slamming it for the New Republic. I had him on talking about this months, over a year ago, actually, during the first series. But it's interesting to think, because I know that most Colombians, or a lot of Colombians that I know, will not watch it, of course. They get very sensitive about the Escobar tale, the myth, the sort of legend around this guy. But it's about education, isn't it? It's about educating the people what went on. I mean,
it is. Because, like, for example, the first series I watched with my political scientist friend, who wouldn't want to see the series because she thought it was going to be terrible, and then got hooked.
Yeah.
And we are talking about a political scientist.
Yeah.
Like the second series, I'm watching with a friend who's a sex worker, who is dealing with all the narcos at the moment, and she's also, like, totally hooked on it, and both, like, from very distinct perspectives.
I mean, that's a very different. So, your friend, the sex worker, what was her, let's say, take on all of this?
Well, she just felt recognized. She saw, like, her reality on American TV portrayed in an accurate way.
Okay. So anyway, Monty. So very interesting. As always, this is a real live show that we're in my family's home, so I apologize.
That was not my dog.
That was my dog.
Way more professional than you are.
my dog can't help himself during these interviews. But so listen, it's very interesting. And when we, you know, we've sort of spun back towards the sex worker thing, but it's the sensitivity towards Escobar. So when I was traveling with this top end travel agent,
this sensitivity towards the Escobar thing is only in a portion of society, and that's, like, the people, like, who have an interest in portraying Medellin as something as it's not. And so you're talking about, like, upper middle class, or, like, the upper class who don't even want to live in Medellin. And who want to have a different past than they actually have.
I would say, I mean, but this upper class is still involved anyway.
Of course.
And of course, I mean, you know, even back in the day, with their failing construction companies and their failing, retail companies, they were able to funnel the money through in order to launder it. I mean, this is the truth.
If you look at the political clans that are surrounding Uribe, and I would in particularly say, like, the Valencia Cosío family. Let me just give you an example of how fucked things are here. Fabio Valencia Cosío was Minister of Justice under I believe the second Uribe administration. His brother was the chief prosecutor here in Medellin, who got arrested for his ties to the Urabeños, who indirectly are a descendant of the Pepes, the guys who killed Escobar. So the brother is in Guillermo Valencia Cosío is in prison now. He's been sentenced. Fabio Balencio Cosio at the time saw no reason to resign as justice minister. But now he's like one of the leading forces of the Centro Democratico, the political party of former President Alvaro Uribe.
Yeah.
Just pretending as if nothing's going on. And Uribe is pretending as if nothing's going on. And all those like people around those political clans are just pretending as if there's nothing going on. And it's them who don't want to talk about Escobar. And it's them who don't want like tourists coming here for Escobar.
This would offer transparency on a certain level, wouldn't it, if there were further investigation?
It would expose like how ambiguous the situation in Medellin is and how Pablo Escobar could never have existed without systematic support from within politics and the military system.
Yeah. Yeah, this is absolutely true. And this is what you see when you go there, is what you think and feel when you sort of scratch a little bit of the surface and start to put the people together. And, you know, you start seeing the same names when you start reading. You know, the same names keep popping up connected to these things. It's a tough one, isn't it? I mean, I don't know how we get past this. I don't know how we try to build on this in Medellin, in Colombia as a whole.
Yeah, because I think I can imagine that in Cali that there's a similar dynamic going on, like who had the Cali cartel and then the Norte del Valle cartel, and then they became the Rastrojos. And you know that the problem is that we are local hubs in an international trade. So Medellin is not the center of anything. It's a hub. Yeah. And if we want to really solve like the problems that we face in Medellin with drug trafficking, we need to talk to the United States and their drug policy, because like their lack of prevention of drug use, their aggressive attitude towards the trafficking of drugs is what's given rise to organizations like the Medellin cartel and then the Oficina de Envigado and you name them, and they are going to keep existing until there's going to be a profound change in the international policy on drugs.
Yes, absolutely. Spot on.
In short, until the United States gets its act together, we're fucked.
I say legalize it all. I say tax it, legalize it.
I also say legalize it all. Like cocaine needs to be legalized.
Yeah.
In Colombia, it needs to be legalized. In the United States, I've done cocaine. I've tried it 3 times. It's shit. A lot of people will try it and will agree with me that it's shit. And it won't harm anyone. It won't be a public health hazard. And if it's legal, it's not a public security risk too.
Mm.
And the funny thing is that I'm from Holland.
Yeah.
So I've seen it work. I've in the Netherlands, like they've given away heroin to the junkies, so basically to squeeze the dealers.
Yeah.
Well, that was the end of the heroin trade. And it also was the end of auto theft.
Huh, interesting, because it's all connected, isn't it?
Yeah, like if you simply, like in the Netherlands, for example, and fortunately now in a lot of places in the United States, where you regulate the sale of marijuana, a drug I personally enjoy consuming.
Mm-hmm.
If you regulate it, if you do proper education in schools on the hazards of drugs or the abuse of drugs, then like then you got something to build on, you know. If you like the current repressive method is just bullshit.
Well, it's counterproductive, like, isn't it?
It has no purpose. There's never going to be an end to this.
Yeah, it's counterproductive measures of this. It's trying to prohibit and all the billions and billions of dollars and all these shows now. I mean, coming back to the TV thing, we've got narco wars. We've got you know, the border patrol shows.
Well,
all of this stuff.
I don't know, like if you have many American listeners, but the American taxpayer has put $10 billion. In Plan Colombia,
yeah.
Which by the end of next year is going to prove to have been absolutely without any effect. Like, that's just $10 billion that you could have spent on educating children on the hazards of drug use.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, a lot of
American
listeners here.
And at the same
here.
Time... and then we don't have to go to fucking funerals all the time, which is our reality here in Medellin. And that's often invisible. Like you've been to Parque Lleras.
Yeah.
But I actually physically have to attend funerals, like, because people get shot all the time, and it's all related to the policy that's defined in Washington DC. And people don't realize this. Like a funeral is really horrible, you know?
Yes,
especially if it's like serial.
Sure.
Like it's become a part of life. Like in the Netherlands, I've only attended one funeral. Like here, like blah, another funeral.
So if I were to say to my listeners, and we do get a lot of the listeners in the US, they're going to come to Medellin. Of course, they're interested in the Escobar tale, the Escobar history.
Of course.
How do
I find it fascinating. Too. Why do you think I'm here reporting on it?
Of course.
Like I think we share the interest.
Oh no, it is. But how would we suppose that they could come down and get a proper, insightful, let's say, introduction into Escobar coming down into Medellin? How there is no Escobar or no museum that will you know that is exhibiting anything accurate about this. There's nothing. There's just sort of exploitative tours.
There's a few dinky tours that really exploit the Escobar phenomenon in the most insensitive way possible, even offering interviews to Pablo Escobar's brother. Which I find repugnant.
Yeah.
So people who come to Medellin and want to find out about Escobar really have no option but to turn to that type of tours simply for some history lessons.
Yeah.
You know, and they'll get skewed history lessons. That's kind of like the sad thing, because I do understand people who come to Medellin that they want to know about Pablo Escobar. Of course they do. Like if you go to Paris, you also want to know about Napoleon. You know, it's Pablo Escobar by far, but there's no comparison. Between his significance in the history of Medellin and in the global drug trade, it's by far the most interesting story coming from Medellin. So people coming here will naturally want to learn about it.
Yeah. I mean, that's the absolute truth of it. You go to Holland, you want to see the Anne Frank house. You go to London, a lot of people go on the Jack the Ripper tour. I mean, truly, truly horrible stuff. You want to see, you go to Poland, people go to Auschwitz, you know, these.
But the difference is that if you, I've not been on the Jack the Ripper tour, but like at the Anne Frank house, like you get an educational, you get a proper portion of history.
Sure.
And people are being made sensitive to anti-Semitism, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So even though it's tourism and people do it like for supposed entertainment, they do end up being educated, being made sensitive to issues that are sensitive.
Sure.
And that are actual, because like anti-Semitism, like Anne Frank has been like the personification of like anti-Semitism during the Nazi reign. Pablo Escobar is the personification of drug trafficking, mm-hmm. of all the narcos in the world. We have the opportunity here to build a historical museum, Anne Frank House style.
Yeah.
Yeah. And really make people sensitive about like the damages that are being done by the use of illegal drugs. And I think it's important that Medellin does this, and Medellin is doing exactly the opposite, unfortunately.
Well, you can't bury this history. This is too widely known to bury. It's too widely. It's
too significant.
Too significant, and the people are interested. I mean, this is the thing: is when you've got this interest from a global population, you can't make it go away. You can't brush it under the carpet. It needs to be accepted and then studied and then thought about, and how best to publicize. How best? Let's get a building.
Or how to channel it?
Yeah. Oh, there's so much to talk about, Adrian. There's too much to talk about on this subject. There's too much to talk about.
I know.
Unfortunately, we have no more time. We can't. We'll have to come back and do this in another show, because, I mean, it really is. It goes on and on and on. But it's been really interesting to talk to you, to hear your perspective from Medellin, you know, let's say from the trenches of the narco culture in Colombia. You really have, I'm sure, educated some of my listeners out there in a good way, you know, told them how it is and what's going on. So, all of my listeners out there, do check out ColombiaReports.com. And if you've got some spare dollars lying around, donate. Let's keep the independent press running. We all need it. We all need a separate voice on Colombia. So, Adrian, thank you again for your time.
No, thank you for the invitation.
You're most welcome. As again, this is Colombia Calling, episode 156. I'm Richard McCall. We've been talking to Adrian Alsalma, the director, owner, editor of Colombia Reports. That's ColombiaReports.com. It's wholly reader funded. So please open your wallets, give a little bit of cash to Colombia Reports, and let's keep the independent press in business. I hope you've enjoyed this show. We'll be back next week with 157 with another interviewee talking about something to do with Colombia. Thank you for listening.